This is Writer's Cast. I'm your host, David Wilk. This is part two of my interview with Tony Abbott, a writer who is based in Connecticut and is known as, first and foremost, a children's author who's written over 75 different books. And we are talking today in Westport, Connecticut, March 5th, 2009, a beautiful but cold day marking perhaps the imaginary end of our winter.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
It may end. But we were in the middle of talking about Tony's last big book, which I would say was not that long ago, 2008, The Postcard, which is a mystery for kids, I would, what would you say, 12 to 10 to 14, somewhere in there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The book has just been put on a couple of lists, in their middle school lists.
So middle school, you know, the children's book business is kind of funny. They segment.
They do.
And I understand that because you have to do that. But, of course, I think kids read slightly differently than their age groups often.
Yeah.
But would you say, so this means like 9 to 11 is probably the age range.
Yeah, probably, although, you know, as we were talking about before, and we'll talk about more, there are two mysteries, two timelines going on. So it is a little bit more complex.
Right.
So,
and this is a complicated story.
Yeah.
And now I read it as, you know, I'm an adult. I've read a lot of books. it captured my attention. I thought this was a pretty engaging novel. And there's a lot of discussion about, you know, YA as a category, young adult, for people who are not in the book business.
Yeah.
It, you know, there's some tension there between, I think, sometimes the writers and the readers. Mm-hmm. The idea that children should, you know, read a certain kind of complexity, let's say, certain subject areas, themes that are not in grown-up fiction. But at the same time, probably you and I certainly, as a kid, I read books that were written by adults for adults. I may not have read the most complex when I was 11 or 12, but there were lots of books that we read.
Yeah, the subject matter intrigues you or something
right.
about
and,
it.
And yeah. there's nothing to prevent you from entering that world. I mean,
right.
Mark Twain is considered today to be a children's author for many of those books, but I'm not sure that Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn were in their era limited in that scope.
Oh, certainly not. Yeah.
And I think The Postcard, I will say, you know, I'm not just trying to make you feel good. I think grown-ups, this is not just a book that, you know, you would say, well, kids will read this and adults won't be interested. I think it's a pretty challenging novel.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I think part of the reason that adults write books for children, and part of the reason that goes into the writing is that they're satisfying part of themselves, and they're, you know, children's writers are adults, but they also are writing the book that they would like to read.
Oh, that's a very good point. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned I noticed that you'd written this book as an homage to the old Florida.
Yeah.
It means did you have grandparents who were...
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, it is a mystery, but one of the things that I really tried to do with this book was to give it some sort of emotional depth. And Jason, the main character, the boy who finds one of these old 1940s postcards that sort of launches him on this mystery, his family is on the rocks. He lives in Boston. His father has left him and his mother in Boston, and he's gone down to Florida where Jason's grandmother has just passed away. And as happened to me when I was growing up, my mother asked me to go down because my grandmother had passed away, and we went to go down to fix up her house and clean it up for selling because we just, you know, we lived in Connecticut and we just couldn't have this house in Florida. There was no reason to have this piece of real estate. So that's what's happening to Jason. His father's gone down there to clean up and sell, and his father asked Jason to come down and help him. And Jason on the plane realizes that, wait a second, this is not, you know, this is not a marriage that's holding together. His mother's staying in Boston. She doesn't care so much about the family staying together. The father is still trying to find himself, and Jason is sort of in the middle. And so I wanted to include that, and that's really... When you talk about old Florida, you know, I visited Florida, St. Petersburg, which is where the story takes place, on the Gulf Coast. My grandmother and grandfather live there, actually in the house that I described Jason going to. So they live there, and I went down as, you know, when I was growing up with my mom and my brother, and we spent time down there. And you know, Florida in the 50s and 60s was, looking back on it now, was this, you know, this golden age of tacky stuff. and all these roadside attractions. And there was something about the heat there for somebody coming from the north. You know, I was born in Ohio, and some of those trips were from Ohio to Florida, and then later from Connecticut to Florida. And, you know, coming from up north and going down south, it was like entering a different nation altogether.
And it comes across in the book. Now, of course, the interior life for your protagonist is that he's essentially on his own, mm-hmm. because his father has this accident.
Yeah,
and it's great in that sense. You know, the sort of classic idea of coming of age. Mm-hmm. You know, he's of that. I think he's 12 in the book.
Yeah, 12, 13.
And
yeah.
This is his chance to establish himself as a person.
Right, and you know, I guess it's become a commonplace with children's writers that you somehow, obviously, are not withdraw the parents from the scene so that the child has a chance to grow up within the covers of the book,
and it works. And he finds a girl to do it with, and
what's
interesting is you have lots of old people that they engage with, and I thought, to me, that was really a very important factor, you know, that separates this book from many others. And it didn't feel forced. It's not like you're teaching the 12-year-old a lesson about old people. I never felt that at all. But I liked the idea that the mystery and a lot of the action came about with these old people. And I don't want to give that away.
No.
But you mentioned on your website, I thought this was great, that you like the old Marx Brothers movies.
Yeah.
Well, you have Marx Brothers scenes in this. Three Stooges, maybe. It's hard to tell which.
There's a lot of slapstick. There's a lot of that sort of screwball comedy in here. I love, you know, as I age, I love this idea of the old guys getting together for one last job, and that I think is part of the mystery here. I mean, a lot of to tell the readers quickly who don't know the story, Jason finds this postcard. It leads him to this very old detective story from this pulp magazine, and the postcard leads him to chapter 2 of this story, and that leads him to chapter 3 and so forth. And so he's assembling essentially this old tough guy noir detective story at these various sites. And it seems to involve his grandmother, and he's not quite sure, but the grandmother who has passed away seems to be a character in these stories. And without giving too much away, I'm saying that the other characters in this story still happen to be somewhere on the fringes of this world
they're real,
they're alive.
I think there is that tension too, that this, you know, you read these old amazing mysteries, mm-hmm. and you think, well, did these people just make that up? Did stuff like this really happen? Are there really bad guys who would act this way?
Yeah.
And what I loved was that you know they were still this was real.
Yeah.
And then but you couldn't, there was a line between the fantasy of the fantastic and the reality of the real.
Right.
And you know, and of course it did relate to his mother, his grandmother and his father.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some maybe a little unresolved stuff there about, you know, their family.
Yeah.
So it's a very satisfying novel. From anybody's point of view.
It's interesting, and I love those aging characters. They have such wit and cleverness and quirkiness about them. It was really only later when I was writing this, really toward the end, when for some reason I was describing it for either a publisher or some sort of a promotional thing, that I realized that, and you could say, oh, well, of course you knew this, but I'm thinking it's more unconscious than conscious, which is that it's a three-generation love story. He discovers the love story of his grandmother and this old detective writer. Then he's looking at the marriage of his parents splitting apart, which is not a romance so much, but it's, you know, it is an effect of romance. You know, it's a complicated relationship breaking apart. And then the third generation of that is him and this lawnmower girl, the girl he meets, who is she lives in St. Petersburg, and she's mowing lawns,
she's the driver.
She is
of the story.
She
keeps everybody going.
Well, when you go back to that first meeting, and I said, I think, you know, my next book is going to be a thriller. I had no concept of this girl, Dia. She is...
And by the way, I think, you know, you could write a novel about her.
I would so love to. Actually, I've been... a couple readers have said, you know, oh, we want to see more of Dia.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the two of them together, they get off on totally the wrong foot, Jason and Dia. And she just has no time for his awkwardness and his saying the wrong things and his inability to follow this thing. She went, come on, you know, this is a mystery, let's follow it. So she becomes his ally in tracking down the various parts of the story and putting it all together. And, you know, I have to say that critics, you know, most of the reviews I've gotten on blogs and in the press and everything and by readers has been, you know, uniformly, well, I won't say uniformly, but and it's been
that would be too good,
right? It would be, and it's mostly complimentary. But the people who have mentioned things about it have not been swept away by the story, and I think that that's the key. If you're holding off, if you're not willing to be, you know, suspended, if your disbelief is not suspended, you're going to look at this thing and say, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense.
So it didn't feel creaky. I felt, you know, to me, my main measure for mysteries or any kind of complicated story is if I feel that the author has had to force anything into place, you know, I can feel the wheels turning, then that makes me uncomfortable. I want a natural story, and I'm not an uncritical reader, but I'm not overly critical.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I know it's a story, you know, it doesn't have to flow you know, seamlessly, but I never felt that you were pushing, you know, to make things happen.
No, I don't think that. I think, but you know, I did want to say, you know, okay, this part of this story is this breakup of Jason's parents and his family. Part of it is this budding relationship he has with this girl. Part of it is this old story, but it's sort of intermixed with this idea of old Florida, which has a sort of a magical realist element to it. There's something other than simply realism here.
Right.
And that, what, you know, if you take that, there's something like, you know, when he's at the very end of the story, I won't say where it is because that's one of the things I want to keep as a mystery, but he feels this warm breeze coming over him from the Gulf of Mexico. And it's like this, I don't know, it's just this sort of indefinable thing that happens and it washes over him, and he realizes, you know...
Well, it's a magical place.
It is. It's a magical place. And you know, without admitting it, and they never admit it, you know, he is probably falling in love with this girl. You know, he's 13 years old, and she's the same age, and there's just something there. It's at the very, you know, beginning of any sort of relationship.
But it's a kind of... It's much more... I guess I wouldn't... I never felt that it was... Well, maybe it's your book, obviously, but I felt like they were more... companions in that way, like,
well, they
falling
are.
In love with your best friend almost, you know, where
you suddenly have this
feeling of
never admit
there was no romance.
No, there's no romance sense. But there is just there's something chemical or spiritual going on, and the fact that you know, it's all a mystery. You know, my grandparents were a mystery, my parents,
and he never that stuff you don't solve.
No, you don't solve it.
You reconcile, you come to terms with it.
Yeah,
well, how does, I mean, this is sort of a leap also, but do you feel that your, because I know your next books, the Haunting of Derek Stone, is more of, you know, I would say metaphysical maybe?
Yeah, okay.
So is this something that you're really interested in? Is this something that you feel drawn to, is the kind that kind of other side of reality?
Well, I have to tell you, the origin of the Haunting of Derek Stone, which is a ghost story set in sort of a archetypal Louisiana, and it's fully in the Southern Gothic tradition of Flannery O'Connor and Truman Capote and you know, all those bizarre types, and it's...
Do you read a lot of Flannery O'Connor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of... I love Flannery O'Connor, and I love Faulkner and the Southern novels of Truman Capote and all sorts of people. And it was my reading of those people was an offshoot of the Florida book, The Postcard. I wanted to immerse myself, I did go to Florida, and I did a lot of on-the-ground research for this, and I did a lot of... you know, soul searching and looking back in my past for the past elements in the postcard, but I also wanted to get the tone of Southern writing And I don't know if much of it really comes to fore in there, because there's such a tough guy, hard-boiled language in there too. But out of the reading those writers, I said, you know what, I want to do more in this Southern writing tradition. And you know, I'm a Connecticut boy, and previous to that, right, an Ohio boy. So so it's going to be a transplanted sort of thing. But I really love that. I love the cast of oddball characters that turn up.
This isn't like New Orleans vampire stuff.
No, it's not vampire. No, it's very realistic. However, there are lots and lots of dead people, lots and lots of ghosts, and this boy, Derek. Derek Stone is a regular kid. He's 14 years old. He's in his first year in high school, and he and his father and his brother are in a train accident, and trains play a very big part in this story. And his brother and his father die. This is in chapter 2 of the first book, and I don't think it's giving anything away to say that he's completely in grief. His uncle comes from the West Coast and sort of helps him deal with this tragedy, because his mother has left years before. She can't be located for some oddball reason. So it's just Derek, and his family disappears in the matter of seconds at this accident. So he goes back to New Orleans. His uncle is there. 3 or 4 weeks later, there's a knock on the door. He opens it up, and there's his brother. His dead brother. Well, he says, "Oh my gosh, you're alive!" And something is quite different with his brother Ronnie. And the whole first book really is setting the scene for Derek's realizing that, in fact, there is some communication between the land of the dead and the land of the living, and it somehow affected his brother Ronnie. And Derek realizes that he himself is part of something much bigger.
That sounds great.
It's a lot of fun. It's a fairly short book, and one of the reasons that but it is for older readers, 9 and up, because it's not graphic anyway, but it is scary. It's
right, a little
really
too much for a 6, 7, 8 year old.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Clearly, kids, 9 year olds, 10 year olds, they're ready for. They want ghosts.
Yeah, they do. And I say, who? When I go to a class, and I do this often, I say, who here likes scary stories? Because I'm ready to talk about it, and everybody raises their hand in the fourth and fifth grades. They're right. Ready for this stuff.
Now this could end up being your identity for a lot of people, because kids remember the writers that influenced them. Fourth, fifth grade is very important, and this could be Tony Abbott could become known as the scariest guy
it's
around.
It's become so much fun. I've just finished the second revision of the fourth book, which brings Derek's story to kind of a head. And it's a lot of fun. It's not fantasy, and I've done a lot of fantasy, and they're blendings of elements of mystery in it, but it's essentially, and I don't like to use the word horror, because that conjures up all kinds of gruesome things for me. It's not gruesome, but it is scary, and when Derek begins to hear voices and begins to see people that other people don't see, it's in one sense sort of comical, in that great sort of odd Southern tradition, but it's also chilling, and I had such a good time writing these chilling stories. Well, it's not something I've done before, but I want to do some more.
I'm planning on reading. I want to thank you deeply for
thank
spending
you, David.
The time.
This has been so much fun.
Enjoyed it a lot, and so this is David Wilk saying goodbye for Writer's Cast with Tony Abbott, and thank you all.